As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
What's up, Atlanta? They say sports never sleep on the weekend, and even if it's the weekend. Well, they're certainly not sleeping today. We have so much to talk about. My name is Garrett Chapman. You are coming off the bench with me. It's draft week, so we're going to jump in here in just a couple minutes to discuss best case and worst case scenario for our Atlanta Falcons this week. We also have Ronald Acuna sending tweets down on rehab assignment. He's not even on the assignment yet, but he's down in Florida right now sending tweets. What are we doing? Well, we'll hear from the manager, his reaction to that. We'll hear from him in just a little bit. Plus, we'll hear from Jared Kelenic as well. Hawks season comes to a crashing end. Not the greatest way to end a season, but look, I have a reason for us to take this season as a success, but with an asterisk. I'll tell you more about that when we get into the 720 segment. Before we go across the A, we got Brooks Austin joining us. I've got Caleb Johnson joining us to talk about that Hawks season. And Luke Easterling, he's going to be joining us later on in the show. We have so much to get into. Plus, the Braves get a sweep? Hell yeah. Feeling good. Life is good. But let's jump into our big story here because it's draft week. And I feel like at the very end of the day, draft conversation needs to dominate this show. It needs to dominate this segment. And I want to roll into a best-case, worst-case scenario for the Atlanta Falcons because they are picking at number 15. I'm sure you've heard that 7 billion times. I'm sure you've heard all of these different names that the Falcons have been, or people, writers and pundits have pontificated and speculated and guessed what the Atlanta Falcons are going to do. The only person who really knows anything is Terry Fontenot. And even then, he probably doesn't control everything that he wants to. But look, the Atlanta Falcons are picking at 15. They're also picking at 46. 116, that's round 4. And then we're into the seventh round, 218 and 242. Not a lot of options there. So what you have to understand in this draft class is that the Atlanta Falcons have two picks that are going to be coming in the top 50. You also have two picks that are going to be coming in the top 100. You also have just two picks that are going to be coming within the top 115. You know what that means? You got to make the most of it. Ain't that the truth? Some people have talked about how this team could trade back. I know John Fricke was talking about it a little bit earlier today. He was reacting to a piece that Will McFadden and Torrey McElhaney put out on AtlantaFalcons.com. He was adamant that the Atlanta Falcons should not trade back. I don't necessarily agree. If the situation is right, then the Atlanta Falcons have all the reason in the world to trade back. You need bites at the apple. You need as many guys that you can get in here as possible. Because Dane Brugler, he from The Athletic, he released The Beast this week, and I've been parceling through that as I'm preparing for my draft coverage on Friday night. But the comment, and it's not just him, it's shared by a lot of different people, including myself, is that this isn't exactly a star-studded class. Like, this isn't a draft class where you're loaded with premium talent. But it is loaded with a ton of starters. A ton of starters. You know what that tells me? The Atlanta Falcons need as many picks as possible because they need starters. You need a cornerback to play opposite of A.J. Terrell. You might need a safety. You definitely need an edge rusher. You need some defensive line help. You need some linebackers. By golly, you also need a wide receiver. Maybe you even need a right tackle. This Falcons team has a lot of needs. It has a lot of needs. All right, so let's jump into some of these best case scenarios. A lack of premium talent, like I mentioned, it means that we have a good shot at a few of these scenarios happening. And I'll keep it kind of broad here. Run on tight ends. Two names in particular, Colston Loveland out of Michigan, Tyler Warren out of Penn State. Two Big Ten guys. Two good players. I know they aren't going to be playing here in Atlanta. We already took our tight end in the first round. But they could be playing somewhere else after the first round. After day one, we should have one, if not both of those guys drafted. If they go in front of the Atlanta Falcons, that's a tremendous situation for the Atlanta Falcons to be in. A run on wide receivers, Isaiah Bond, Tet McMillan, Luther Burden, Matthew Golden. These are all guys who have a high probability of going in the first round. A few of those guys have a chance of going in front of the Falcons at 15. A run on running backs, Omarion Hampton and Ashton Jeanty. Those are two guys who I've just seen in the most recent mock that I looked at, had both of those guys going in front of the Falcons. And if that happens, then the Falcons are in pretty good shape. Because it also opens, first off, I mean, just because it leaves edge rushers on the board for us, so we have our pick of the litter. Of course, Abdul Carter's going to be gone. He's going to be gone from the first couple of picks. But you're going to have your pick of the litter if that happens. The other thing that also happens with this is it creates sort of a tantalizing effect at pick 15. Where somebody who maybe once one of the premier wide receivers, there aren't a lot of premier wide receivers necessarily in this class, maybe not as the ones that you're going to necessarily trade up all the way up and go get, but you say you're a team like New England. Say you're a team that desperately needs wide receiver help. Say you're a team who kind of needs that extra guy at the tight end position. Say you're a guy who you're a team that feels like they need a running back. And the first guy was taken. Maybe the second guy was taken. That run on that position is started, and you need to jump up in there. Well, that puts the Falcons in a very good situation where they could trade back, because that's really the only way that you're going to pick up any assets at that point. That's it. But the last best-case scenario for the Atlanta Falcons that I'm going to parse through here in just a moment is Shedeur Sanders falling in this draft. And you could say the same thing about Jackson Dart, but I don't necessarily expect Jackson Dart to be taken in the top 10. I don't think that that's necessarily going to be the case. Shedeur Sanders, on the other hand, very well could be taken in the first 10 picks or so. He could be taken in the top 5. Hell, he could be taken at number 3. He could also be taken at 21. I know the Pittsburgh Steelers might be calling. It's an interesting situation. And quarterback is one of the only positions, really, that I could see somebody trading with the Falcons to go get him. And this is probably the best case scenario for the Atlanta Falcons, is Shedeur Sanders falling in this draft class. Because at that point, he drops one pick more. And you have teams like the Pittsburgh Steelers who are sitting there saying, I need my quarterback. Maybe the Cleveland Browns, they have a second pick in the first round. I mean, look, there are teams who need quarterbacks. And at that point, the price gets a little bit more appetizing. Trading up into the top 5 is something that I don't think a lot of teams really want to do. You're not going to trade from I got Dom Taraski on the board, so that's why I keep highlighting the Pittsburgh Steelers here. I don't think that they want to trade from 21 all the way up into the top 5. That is an expensive trade. That's a very expensive trade. And I don't think that Shedeur Sanders is worth it. That's my opinion. I don't think he's a first-round quarterback. I think he's a fine player. I think he's more of a second or third-round guy, but I just don't see the ceiling being all that high on him. But that's not the point. I'm not the one buying. I'm the guy selling. So if I'm the Atlanta Falcons, I can sell that pick. And if I have a team who's on the board or looking to get onto the board to go get that quarterback, I could throw in a couple extra picks here and there. I think that's really the best case scenario for the Atlanta Falcons. Jackson Dart, you can throw in there. I don't see him as a first-round talent. Certainly not a top 15 talent. But, man, I've been wrong before. I also didn't have the Atlanta Falcons taking a quarterback at pick number 8 last year. But then in terms of worst case scenario, you look at the edge position. It just means you have a run on edge. That's really my only worst case scenario. That's it. And at that point, you're desperately trading back. Maybe you take a Will Johnson, the cornerback out of Michigan. Maybe you can take something there. Malachi Starks at that point. I just have a very hard time believing that all of these edge rushers are going to be gone. You have so many guys. Yes, so many guys. And I don't necessarily love the idea of maybe taking a Donovan Ezeraku out of Boston College at 15. I think that's way too high, a little too rich. But he's also my number 7 edge rusher. Shamar Stewart's there. He should be there. Mykael Williams should be there. James Pierce should be there. Mike Green should be there. Jaylen Walker should be there. Abdul Carter is already going to be gone, of course. But the Falcons have tons of players that they can take with that pick. And I love these edge rushers. Look, we'll talk to Luke Easterling a little bit later in the show. He has a couple of guys a little bit deeper into this draft that we can circle. And you can come back and you can really find a lot of guys who can solve a lot of needs. But assuming there are no trades, I do feel like Shamar Stewart or Mykael Williams, they need to be the guy. I've come down to that. Mykael Williams is somebody who I feel like if he played a full season at Georgia last year, he would be going in the top 5. Hell, he might be going number 1 overall. That's how talented that guy is. And then you add the body size, just the incredible measurables. If he can be that guy who played against Texas, just slap a Longhorn on the side of every helmet that he has to go up against and make sure they get a little bit of burnt orange. That man will play like a guy with his hair on fire. And we might be talking about the next TJ Watt out here. But this is a guy who I feel like really could have been a top 5 pick had he been healthy all last season. And Jeff Ulbrich, they were just out there at Georgia's Pro Day. Jeff Ulbrich spent a long time with Mykael Williams. A lot of personal time. And I think that that's just the pick that makes the most sense for me. If it's not him, it's Shamar Stewart. Because I'm drafting for potential more than anything. The body type, the measurables, all of that points to those two guys. James Pierce, Mike Green, they also have those off-field issues. I'm not going to go too deep into that information here just because I don't know everything that there is to say about it. And I don't want to be wrong about something there. But it's important to note that. They have great numbers. The production was awesome. But the ceiling, I just don't feel like is that high for those two. But as far as Mykael Williams and Shamar Stewart are concerned, those are guys who, at the very minimum, are going to give you really good run defense. At the very minimum. At the base. Right? So I just think that they're going to give you a little bit more versatility. They can do a little bit more for you. And for a team that is in dire need of versatility and just dudes, I think those guys do everything that you need from that position. But, I mean, if it's not an edge, though, Will Johnson, Kelvin Banks, Jahad Campbell is a name that I actually haven't seen the Falcons throw. I haven't seen it thrown around all that much. The Alabama linebacker. Because, I mean, Jeff Ulbrich, the brand-new defensive coordinator, I say brand-new, making his second stint, I guess you could say, as the Falcons defensive coordinator. He's a linebacker's coach at heart. This is how he cut his teeth. And, I mean, unless you're really... The Falcons aren't really good. Troy Andersen is not really been the guy that we needed him to be. And this is not a great draft class at the linebacker position. So you could potentially make the argument that you can go get a Jahad Campbell, a guy who can play inside linebacker or outside, or play on the outside and rush the passer. He could do a lot of different things for you on the outside. He's another guy who's dealing with injuries all last season. Just an interesting case right there.
He's also, I think, would be a really good option to kind of replace some of that leadership. He was really big in Bama's locker room. Mm-hmm. He was praised for his leadership and just ability to kind of move around and stuff like that, and just kind of how he commanded respect from the rest of the locker room. Losing Grady Jarrett this offseason, I think, you know, that's something that you're going to need to replace some of that leadership. And if you can find that in a rookie, especially someone who can wear that green dot for you on the defense, I think that's huge.
Yeah. I don't expect a rookie to be doing that necessarily, but we're also not drafting a guy in the first round just to be the guy next year. He's going to be the guy for the foreseeable future. Jahdt Campbell, that's kind of an unsung name there. A bit of an unsung name who I feel like the Falcons could potentially jump into. But we'll see. I think this team has a lot of fantastic options. It'll make for some very interesting discussions on the station throughout the week. So make sure to download that Odyssey app. Take us wherever you go. When we get back, are you confident in the future of this Hawks franchise? I have a reason that you should be, and also a reason that you shouldn't be. You're coming off the bench with Garrett Chapman right here on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Patience, patience, patience. I feel like that's all we're asked to have here in Atlanta. The Atlanta Hawks, their season comes to a screeching halt over there at State Farm Arena. And it just exacerbates my frustration because I'm sitting here watching the Miami Heat play a playoff game against the Cleveland Cavaliers right now. It's up on my screen. They're losing. And I'm frustrated. I'm so frustrated. It's not that they're losing. I don't care what happens to them. They could win. They could lose. I don't care. Doesn't affect me at this point. What does affect me is the fact that the Atlanta Hawks have missed the playoffs in consecutive years now. They're just a perennial play-in team, a team who can't seemingly get out of their own way. At least the old Hawks team, right? No, this team feels a little bit different. And look, yes, I understand the frustration that a lot of fans have. And Chris Thomas was on the air that night. As soon as the Hawks game ended, he took a lot of calls on the matter. And there were a lot of very frustrated people. And to some extent, it's rightful. I mean, I understand it to some extent. I'm frustrated. I'm a native son of Atlanta. I love this city. I love that team. And they frustrated me. But this team feels a little bit different. What is the future of this team? Are we confident that this season was a success? It's the question that seems like it is. It's seemingly been on the lips of everybody who's talked about this team this year. Was it actually a success? And we'll hear from Trae Young here in a moment. But look, I say yes. Ultimately, this was never a team that was going to win an NBA title. Sorry, it wasn't. It's just not. It's got too many holes. And they were hurt. It wasn't even a full-strength roster. You're going back to January, and you're playing without your second-best player. I don't know what people really expected from this team this year. In fact, I'm more impressed that they would have made the playoffs in the old model. They were an 8 seed. They were an 8 seed. And if you had told me that the Atlanta Hawks were going to be 40-42 in the regular season, I'm not including the play-in record, but if you told me that they were going to be 40-42 at the end of the regular season, but they had lost Clint Capella, but they had lost DeAndre Hunter because they traded him away, but they lost Jalen Johnson, effectively for the entirety of the second half of the season. 40-42? Really? Hell, I thought that team would have been 40-42 with those guys. If we're being real, 40-42 without those guys. That tells me that this team is going in the right direction. And look, Abe Gordon talked a lot about this when the actual injury happened to Jalen Johnson. It was kind of I'm not going to call it a blessing in disguise. It's a silver lining. Let's just put it that way. It's never a blessing when somebody gets hurt. I'm not trying to say that. But injuries crush this team, but it does give you a chance to develop the youth. This is, again, I'll say it again. This team was never winning a title. They never were winning a title. And if you're not going to win a title, you need to figure out something else. And that's what they did. And credit to Landry Fields, credit to this front office. They did a good job. They turned DeJounte Murray, that disaster of a trade, and effectively won the trade. And it happens because you have somebody who was just named a finalist for the Defensive Player of the Year, Dyson Daniels. And then you have the stroke of good luck, and you get the number one overall pick. Zachary Richichet, he was terrible on Friday, notwithstanding. But he showed some of that potential. He flashed why he was a number one overall pick. Now, he's not Cooper Flagg. He's not Victor Wembanyama. He's not LeBron. He's not any of the, I mean, there are guys who go number one who are generational talents. I don't think he's necessarily a generational talent, but I think he can make the Atlanta Hawks a tangibly better franchise. And you add him alongside of Jalen Johnson, alongside of Onyeka Okongwu, alongside of Dyson Daniels, and of course, alongside of our boy Trae Young. Because that gets me into my second point. Trae Young bought in. He bought in to this team. He bought in to Quinn Snyder. He bought into this franchise. And it was in a way that I didn't feel he was bought in the past. He said he did. And look, I can take him at his word, but based off of what I saw on the court, the way he would fly private, he would do everything separate, he kind of warmed up separate, he didn't hang out with the team, he wasn't around them, kind of got the aloof sort of vibe from Trae Young. I didn't see that this year. The Trae Young that I saw this year was the Trae Young in the second half of that basketball game on Friday. In the fourth quarter of that game, diving on the floor for loose balls, playing defense, getting strips. He's never going to be an elite defender. He never will be. And that's okay. But I saw the effort. I saw the effort. I saw him take accountability for that ejection that he had against the Orlando Magic. Old Trae never does that. Old Trae never does that. New Trae does. Now, we can have this discussion all you want. Can he be the guy to lead a team to a championship? I'm not here to have that discussion. I think he makes your franchise tangibly better. I think that him alongside of this tremendous core that it looks like the Hawks are building, I think the Hawks are going to be a pretty damn good team next year. All signs point to the Hawks being a better team next year. That's why this season was successful. That's why this team was successful this season, even though they didn't make the playoffs. It's about development, and Trae Young said as much in his exit interview on Saturday.
I mean, nobody looks at us as a title contender and things like that. So for me, I mean, it's all about how we could get better each and every day and focus on that. And that's something that was told to me before the season started that I needed to focus on and things like that. And because people know how much I really care about winning. And if you really, really know me, that's all I care about. And so for me, I've had to focus more on the younger guys and making sure that we've gotten better each and every day, and I feel like we've done that.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is a guy who's bought into Quinn Snyder. This is a guy who bought into what this team can do. If you really know me, and he cares about winning, yeah, well, I'd hope so. You know, but ultimately, look, I think Hawks fans can be at least have some level of confidence moving into the 2025-2026 season. But Trae doubled down. He says he's confident that he can win here.
Of course. Of course. They're one of the 30 NBA teams. I feel like you can win here. I feel like I can win. I've won here before. I haven't won a championship, but I've achieved a lot of things here. So I know what it takes. I definitely feel like I can win here.
Yeah, well, the team hasn't done a lot of winning here over the last couple of years. They've missed the playoffs. Going back to 2021, they have no playoff wins. Well, series wins. You have no playoff appearances going back to 2023. I mean, you talk about this team getting over the hump. And look, there's a level of frustration that exists within this team. We'll talk to Caleb Johnson coming up here in a little bit. But I see them moving in the right direction. And you talk about offseason priorities. Trae Young getting an extension, I think that needs to be the number one item on the list. That has to be. It absolutely must be the number one thing. He has a player option coming in next summer. So if you want him to be a part of this roster moving forward, that is what you have to do. First priority, extend Trae Young. Number two, you need more shooters, as evidenced by what we saw on Friday. The Miami Heat won that game because they were able to outshoot the Atlanta Hawks for large portions of the game. It ended that the Atlanta Hawks had better numbers on paper than the Miami Heat, but there's a reason that the Miami Heat jumped out to that 16-point lead. There's a reason that the Atlanta Hawks were in that place in the first place. They shot, 17% or something ridiculous against the Magic in the first play-in game? Yeah, that's unacceptable. You can't do that. And I get it. You have some injuries, and you have to do what you can with what you got, but this team needs more shooters. But the number one thing that this team needs is a dadgum big man. You need a killer. You need somebody. Is that Joel Embiid? Maybe. I don't really want Joel Embiid here all that much because he's a guy who I think is on the back end of his career. He's not going to give you a full 82 games. He's already won his MVP. He's not a guy who I highlight as somebody who I want in that locker room necessarily.
He strikes me as a guy who's probably 3 years away from retiring.
He's probably he's on the downturn comfortably. I think he's been on the downturn here for the last couple of years. He won that MVP, and then I think he just kind of hung it up. Now, injuries have a lot to do with it. You're a seven-footer, and injuries pile up. And it's all magnified when you're that big. But the Hawks are going to have some pocket change. They have some flexibility and staying under the luxury tax, that godforsaken luxury tax that I do not want to talk anymore about the luxury tax. But here we are. And if the Hawks can stay under there, go find a big man, then I think that this is a team who not only can, I don't think they're going to make a run at a title next year, but they can make a run at a higher playoff seed. And we can be watching them at some point deeper into April, maybe, God willing, into May or even June. But that's it on the Atlanta Hawks. We got a lot of other things that are going on across this great city. So what do you say we go across the A? Atlanta United, they are embarrassed by the Philadelphia Union. We talked about it last night on the Full Time Report. You can go check that out wherever you get your podcast. But 276 minutes now without a goal in the run of play. Three injuries in this game. Oh, Lord have mercy. Ugly turnovers lead to all three of those Philly goals. Lath, he gets a yellow card. He's suspended for the next match coming up in Orlando next weekend. And you did all this. You were playing up a man. You played up a man for the entire second half. And you still get outscored by a not very good Philadelphia team. They're fine. They're aggressively average. That's really what they are. They're a team who just sent off their best player. They were struggling. They hadn't had a win. I think they were scoreless in their last two. They had scored one goal in their last three, and they dropped three goals on your dome last night. And look, Ronnie Dyla, I'm frustrated as I'll get out. You can go back and listen to that whole podcast, and you can hear my frustration throughout the whole show. Jay Fortune, Noah Cobb, they're inserted into the starting lineup. Ronnie Dyla just looking for anything to try and give that team some life. It doesn't work. I'm frustrated with everything that I've seen. I think there's a lack of accountability. There's a lack of leadership on that team. And until that changes, this team is not going to go anywhere at all. Top four? Talk about playoffs. Anything. No, this team is supposed to be a lot better than it actually is right now. Where are the DPs? The body language is terrible. Miguel Almiron has not been good enough, period. Point blank, period. Brooks Lennon has not been good enough, point blank, period. Lath has been fine in spurts. He's got five goals, but he's got five yellow cards. And he also hasn't scored in damn near a month. I expected a lot more from this team, point blank. I expected a whole hell of a lot more. Now four of the next five matches are on the road. We'll see. We will see. It's the worst nine-game start in club history. Minus five on the goal differential. It's crazy. Braves, they get a win. They get their first series sweep of the year. Grant Holmes looks pretty good. 5 2/3 innings, 4 hits, 4 walks, 1 run, 7 Ks. Drake Baldwin, medals, and Marcelo Zuna, they all homer today. Clutch hitting defines the weekend, but don't let that overshadow a tremendous performance from that bullpen. They won on Friday with what I really think could be, by the end of the day, by the end of the season, we could turn back and look at that game as potentially the game that changed it all for the Atlanta Braves. They're down 3 runs in the bottom of the eighth. They score 5 runs off the bats of Drake Baldwin, a rookie. Then Michael Harris. Money Michael Harris finally seems to have found his stroke. Looking forward to that one. We'll get into a little bit more Braves conversation. Plus, we have Twitter gone bad. We'll have to talk about that as well. But when we get back, Caleb Johnson, he's going to join me. We talked a little bit about the Hawks. No Hawks in the playoffs for the second year in a row. How do they get back? Can they with this group? We'll ask Caleb Johnson next. I'm sitting here having an NBA playoffs conversation with my man Dom Tarasky. Who's the scariest team in the playoffs right now? He says it's OKC. I don't think OKC is a bad answer. I think the Boston Celtics are the correct answer. But look, I think that this is a really, really compelling group of teams in the NBA playoffs this year. Probably more so than I've seen in a very long time. And I think it's been kind of trending this direction here over the last couple of weeks, or years, I should say, just with the way that these teams are continuing to develop and come together. And I think that any number of teams can win a championship this year. I think any number of teams can win a championship this year. I have a hard time believing it's going to be Cleveland. Maybe not. Boston is going to be the team who comes out of the East. It's just who comes out of that Western Conference. It's going to be absolute cinema. But I know that one team is not going to be coming out of anywhere. That's our Atlanta Hawks. And to join us to talk a little bit more about the, give us a postmortem, if you will. Caleb Johnson on the WadeFord.com hotline. Of course, he is our Atlanta Hawks insider, the host of the Dopey Millennial Show. And he's joining me here on Off the Bench. Caleb Johnson, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. Just enjoying some playoff basketball right now.
Yeah, I wish that this was the Atlanta Hawks plan.
Me too.
But as far as like what separates this Atlanta Hawks team from maybe getting over the hump next year, getting out of the play-in, is it as simple as just extending Trey and finding another big man who could potentially make make an impact on this team, or is it a little bit more complicated than that? What is the direction of the Atlanta Hawks this offseason?
Yeah, I think the one thing that was always going to be the case over the course of this season was you're a little bit too young, which honestly is not the worst problem to have, just because you know what's on the other side of that is as this team gets older and gets more experienced, then you would expect that they're going to get better. And so I think a big part of this is another season for Zachary Risacher to put on some muscle in the summer to just get more experience, because I think for him the postseason was a bit of a shock, and just the difference and how physical it really gets. I think, you know, for Dyson Daniels, the same thing as well. It's like he showed his skill set so much on the defensive side of the floor, and I think his offensive game can continue to grow. I think, yes, like having Trey be at the core of this and adding a big certainly is going to help. I think making sure this team has real depth is going to be an important factor as well. And that's one of those where, hey, if you do lose, like you certainly don't want to lose a Jalen Johnson, and that changes your season. But if you do lose him, what's the drop off to the next person? And I think one of the problems was, especially at the five, that when the Hawks didn't have Larry Nance Jr. and then they lose Clint Capella, on top of the fact that they were already missing Jalen Johnson, on top of the fact that they were already missing Kobe Bufkin, it became this like, man, okay, even though they overachieved, you knew they left so much on the table because of all of those injuries. And so getting those guys who were hurt back in the fold, and then getting younger once again, because you're going to have two first-round draft picks if everything works out correctly, it's like the doom and gloom isn't going to stay doom and gloom.
So, Caleb, you would say that would you say that this season was a successful season? I know that was the question that was on the tip of everyone's tongue all over the weekend. It was just, is this a successful season for the Atlanta Hawks?
So Trae Young said no because they didn't make the playoffs, and I understand it from that position. However, if you want to be technical about it, like in previous years, they would have been in the playoffs because they were the 8th seed. And before the play-in tournament existed, that's all they needed to do. They won 4 more games than they did a year ago. And that was a team that was looked at as better than this team. Now you can consider the fact that yes, Trae Young did miss the last little clip of that season with his injury. But I look at it as a success just because of playing through all of those injuries, knowing that you weren't going to be a contender coming into the season. And then let's do a little bit of a comparison. Let's look over in the Western Conference at a team like the Phoenix Suns, who have Kevin Durant, have Bradley Beal, have Devin Booker, and had at one point a coach in Mike Budenholzer who won a championship in Milwaukee. And they finished with 36 wins this season. So, you know, you're talking about a team who has three all-star caliber players. Meanwhile, the Hawks have one, and their next closest in Jalen Johnson out for the year. Yeah, I would call that a success for sure.
Caleb, quick question here. Just popped into the top of my head. You said Kevin Durant, and it kind of got my little brain.
Oh, no.
You got my little brain working overtime here. What's more likely, that the Atlanta Hawks trade Trae Young ahead of his extension year, his final season potentially here in Atlanta, or they go trade or acquire in some way a potential superstar running mate for Trae Young? What's more likely? What's the more likely scenario this summer?
I mean, the more likely scenario is that they would trade Trae, because, you know, they are young and they are far closer to the development side of things than the competition side of things. And that's just Landry Fields, when we talked to him on Saturday, which is crazy to think that was yesterday. Like, it just is the way that this weekend has been so long between games and having exit interviews and all of that sort of thing. But he talked about how they wanted to be competitive while also looking at the development side of things. I think if they had to pick a direction, they would go for the development side because of how young Dyson Daniels is, because of how young Zachary Risache is, because of how young Mo Gay is, you know, and the kind of the list goes on from there. So they're much closer to rebuilding, I believe, even though they call it retooling, than they are trying to be a contender. So trying to get a running mate for Trae right now, and I don't know that that's necessarily the best idea. Like, you're going to have either 13 or 14 in this year's draft because of the Kings pick, unless there's a 5% chance that it ends up being a top four pick and goes to the Kings. And then you're going to have the Lakers pick, which is going to be in the 20s, like I think 22 to 25. And so, like, you could for sure draft someone at 13 or 14 that turns into a star in the NBA. You just don't quite know it yet. You also really need to see a full season of a healthy Jalen Johnson as to whether or not he can be that person who steps up and turns into the all-star that we all believe he can be. I don't think this isn't going to be an off-season of splashy moves for the Hawks, but they're going to have a little bit of money because of the freedom that the salary that they cleared up by trading away DeAndre Hunter. And so I'm hoping that they use that money wisely for depth, because depth has been a problem the last couple of seasons. And it becomes tiresome to be like, oh, another injury hindered the Hawks from where they wanted to get to.
Yeah, it feels like an eat-your-vegetables type of offseason here for the Atlanta Hawks.
Absolutely. That is a perfect way of describing it.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is a team that needs to get better, and they haven't been good enough, like, just point blank. I mean, they've missed the playoffs in consecutive years. That's just not good enough. You haven't won a playoff series since 2021. That's just not good enough. And I think you nailed it, Caleb. I mean, it's the fact that this Hawks team is, it feels like they could go out and be very aggressive and add somebody big. I know that at random times they've been included, their names have been included with the big dogs of, like, the big players in the NBA. But what is a team, though, that you would say the Hawks would be emulating? I feel like every different style of front office has gone different directions, but as far as a style of play that you would be comparing the Atlanta Hawks to, at least something that they would be trying to emulate, what team would you point to? It's kind of a hard question there.
And could be a tough question, but I think OKC, like, quite honestly, where OKC has their star. Now, granted, I'm not saying that Shai and Trae are on the same level. Like, I do understand that Shai is a monster in and of himself, but I think their movement of youth is something that, you know, and acquiring a lot of picks to have available. Like, the Hawks are now going to be kind of in catch-up mode, I would think, because of the initial DeJounte Murray trade and how many first-round picks they gave away to San Antonio. And so I think they've been trying to make moves to acquire pieces that, you know, kind of sets them up for that future success. Whereas, I mean, OKC, they did a little bit more of the tear it all down and we're just going to take everyone's pick and stash them away. But I do think as far as, like, OKC isn't looked at as just name recognition after name recognition. You know Shea and you know Chet because they ended up landing him. But outside of that, it's been role players who know their role and excel at their role really well. And I always think that's, you know, a good direction. When guys know where they stand on a team and are willing to play the role that they are expected, that is what leads to success. And I think that is a big part of what caused problems in the past. And not to throw anyone under the bus, but I don't think DeJounte ever fit into the role that he needed to play. I don't think John Collins ever fit into the role that he needed to play. I don't think DeAndre Hunter ever fit into the role that he needed to play versus what those guys thought they were. And so, you know, finding guys like a Zachary Risacher who is far more willing to do what's the best thing for the team over, hey, I need my stats so I can go win Rookie of the Year. I think that shows, you know, the style that the Hawks want to go towards. And then even with Zach playing that style, he still gets rewarded by being a finalist. And I hope to see him getting picked as Rookie of the Year because I think he deserves it.
Yeah, him and Dyson Daniels, Defensive Player of the Year, both are named into that group. But Caleb, put your Landry Fields shoes on for a second, or put his hat on. Just what are you doing this offseason to get the Atlanta Hawks to, not necessarily to that Thunder level, but a little bit closer to where they are? What is your strategy this offseason?
I would try to find young depth. Like, you're going to have your two first-round picks, and then I just don't want this team to go out and sign guys that are on, you know, like long-term deals. I feel like everything you're doing right now is finding role players that add depth to this team that you're not attached to long-term. The one deal that I didn't like that the Hawks have made recently, and it's not because I don't like the person, because I think the person, you know, he's a great guy, but Terrence Mann is someone that the Hawks traded for, and he just started a new contract this upcoming season. It's going to be like $15.5 million a season, and I think that was a little too much dip on the chip kind of thing, in my opinion, for a team that, sure, he's a good defender, but he doesn't necessarily have the offensive game that complements this team particularly well at the amount of money that he costs. I would be curious to see if the Hawks are able to, you know, go out and maybe find another destination for him, if it's completely possible. I would also love, in the same respect, for them to be able to bring back Caris LeVert, but not have to do it for 3 years. If you could get him back on a 2-year deal, and, you know, get him the money that I think he deserves, and in that respect, then as you start to build out that depth, decide what you're going to do with Kobe Bufkin, you know, and what other role players you need to round this thing out. I think you'll be in a pretty respectable spot for this upcoming season, where I think this team is legitimately 2 years away from truly contending. Because I think once Zach is 21, that's just a completely different type of player, with the ability to put on muscle and all those sorts of things than what you've seen right now with him as a rookie.
Patience, patience, patience. That's how I let off our last segment. That's how I'm going to end this one. Caleb Johnson, appreciate your time, man.
Absolutely. One quick thing. I do want to add, Landry Fields yesterday, he also spoke about the fact that he's impatient at times, wanting the process to happen faster. But he mentioned that he doesn't want to get caught up in the moment and be reactionary.
and make a move that cost them. And I feel like to some extent he was kind of hinting about the DeJounte Murray trade, but in the same respect, just any kind of move like that that would cost too much just for trying to rush things. So it's something for fans to keep in mind.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Caleb. Thanks again. Appreciate your time, buddy.
Absolutely, man. You have a good one.
Yeah, happy Easter to you, my friend. And look, this is going to be an interesting offseason for the Atlanta Hawks. And Caleb, I think it's a great point. It's not necessarily going to be a sexy offseason. Like, we're not going to go trade multiple first-round picks for DeJounte Murray again. Not probably going to do that, you know? But it could still be a very successful offseason. Look, so I called it an eat-your-vegetables type of offseason. I think that's really what this Atlanta Hawks team needs. They need depth. They need guys who can fill roles, and they need guys who can who are, you know, in the right mindset to fulfill those roles. All right. When we get back, the tweet heard around the world, the tweet that is all people really want to talk about. Ronald Acuna, Brian Snicker, Jared Kelenic, and something that did or did not happen. We'll talk about that when we get back. You're coming off the bench with me, Garrett Chapman, right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.